You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Carolyn Tomino. Carolyn, it's good to have you here this morning.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So the way the show begins is with a huge question. Who are you? What do we need to know about the life you aspire to live, the labels you've worn, the things you've done to start this conversation?
Mm-hmm. So I am a transplant from, I'm not a townie, I didn't grow up in Ithaca, but I moved here to go to college and fell in love with the community, with the area. I'm someone who's on a path to improvement throughout my life. I'm self-analytical. I think a
reflective.
Lot. Reflective. Yep. And I love to learn from other people and to know other people, to dig deep. So I've been told I'm very easy to talk to. Mm-hmm. I put people at ease, as I'm sure you do.
And possibly a little intense.
Yeah, sometimes a little intense. I've learned to back off of that a little bit when it's read the body language.
right. Yeah, you got to look at the body language first. That was one of my
yeah. Yeah, that's important. But I'm an empathetic person, and I'm also, a friend of mine has described me as pathologically honest, which wasn't necessarily a compliment. Sometimes I say things without thinking that it's something that would impact people, and so
right, and that's a little like not anticipating the body language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you also stated it with a neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which means that you don't disown it or disavow it in some sense.
No. Yeah. It's I take it as a compliment. Sure. It wasn't necessarily intended that way, although this person loves me. So
No, I know. And things can be said in the heat of a conflict that reveal mm-hmm. truths that are deeper than we may mm-hmm. always want to live with.
Very true.
Up front. Yeah. Living out loud. Yeah. Anything else before we?
I think of myself as a problem solver.
Mm-hmm.
Again, sometimes that's great, and sometimes it can get taken too far when people don't want you to help solve their problems. But
well, yeah, you know, is it a problem to be solved, or is it a challenge to be appreciated mm-hmm. and lived with?
Yeah.
You know, and that's it's hard sometimes to know.
Exactly. Yeah. But I approach most situations that way, as, you know, embracing, observing, identifying things that could be improved, especially around work, mm-hmm. you know, my work life.
Ah, one of those.
Yeah.
Constantly mm-hmm. trying to figure out how to do things better.
Yeah,
and driving your coworkers mildly crazy.
Exactly, yes.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think we found some common ground here. No. Anyway, so you also brought some music with you.
What
would you like to open with?
I wanted to start with Joni Mitchell and Old One California, because it reminds me of my early days of travel and discovery.
Okay. Here we go.
Sitting in a park in Paris, France, reading the news and it sure looks bad. They won't give peace a chance. That was just a dream some of us had. Still a lot of lands to see, but I wouldn't want to stay here. It's too old and cold and settled in its ways here. Oh, but California, California, coming home. I'm gonna see the folks I dig. I'll even kiss a sunset peak. California, I'm coming home. I met a redneck on a Grecian Isle who did the goat dance very well. He gave me back my smile, but he kept my camera to sell. Oh, the rogue, the red, red rogue. He cooked good omelets and stews, and I might have stayed on with him there, but my heart cried out for you. California, oh, California, coming home. Oh, make me feel good. good rock and roll band. I'm your biggest fan. California, I'm coming home. Oh, it gets so lonely when you're walking and the streets are full of strangers. All the news are give you the blues, just give you the blues. So I bought me a ticket, I caught a plane to Spain, went to a party down a red dirt road. There were lots of pretty people there, reading Rolling Stone, reading Vogue. Said, how long can you hang around? I said, a week, maybe two, just until my skin turns brown. And I'm going home to California. California, I'm coming home. Oh, will you take me as I am? Strung out on another man. California, I'm coming home.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Carolyn Tomeno. So Carolyn, what are some of the experiences that you have had to live through that have helped you learn how to be the reflective problem solver person that you value, mm-hmm. and learn to kind of live within that space? Yeah.
When I look back on my life, I think that one of the most formative experiences that I had was when I was a young teenager. We moved from one neighborhood to another on Long Island. It was a mile apart,
just a mile apart, neighborhoods. Yeah.
But it was opposite ends of the universe, you know, culturally, socially, very, very different. And it was terrifying, you know. It was like the ground had been ripped out from under me, and I couldn't imagine myself in the future. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I didn't have a picture of myself. And what I learned was that I had a lot more strength within myself than I realized I'd had. Mm-hmm. So that was important. It taught me a lot about myself.
Sure. Sure. And what was the difference? What was, you know, I mean you can say, yeah, the towns or not, but what were the differences that you went from and came to?
So the neighborhood I grew up in initially was a middle, lower middle class neighborhood, blue collar, mm-hmm. salt of the earth kind of people. It was a dead end street. Almost like a small neighborhood.
Right.
A small town on Long Island. Mm-hmm. Lots of kids playing in the street. And the new community was much, there was a lot more money, mm-hmm. a lot more style requirements. And
mattered how you looked, how you spoke.
Mattered how you look, how you spoke, how you behaved. Yeah, and I wasn't used to any of that. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I figured it out.
Right, right. Right. So what were you able to do with that strength that you hadn't imagined doing when you were, so you were a teen, an early teen?
Yeah. Yeah. 13. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's in middle school. And,
yeah.
So what opened up for you at that point?
I think that's when I really learned how to listen to people, because I wanted to understand this new world that I was in and how to operate, how to make friends.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I think just because I was shy initially, I probably didn't say much, so I listened a lot. And I realized people really enjoy that, you know, listening to them and asking them questions about themselves. And then I realized that I enjoyed it, learning about other people. Uh-huh. So I think it was sort of a switch for me to go from, you know, I'm the center of the universe to, you know, there's universes all around me.
Right. And that might have happened, but it might have been much more slowly had you stayed in your
exactly.
own community.
Mm-hmm.
But because you were like a fish out of water, mm-hmm. or in a strange environment, you really had to kind of listen in order to survive.
Yeah.
But more than survive, to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
So when how has that affected your relationships later in life?
That's a good question. I value friends and family intensely. I'm mm-hmm. a devoted friend, daughter, stepmother, wife. I'm very committed to the people around me. And I think that part of that is that those are the folks I was relying on, my inner circle mm-hmm. in that time. I'm not sure that answers the question.
Well, no, I mean, actually, it helped you. While you're strengthening the inner circle, you're listening to people who are beyond that circle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole, so your life has some real texture and some depth. And mm-hmm. what I was thinking as you started that was that you probably got to know the people around you even better because you were listening to outsiders more closely.
Mm, yeah.
And that's one of the,
yeah, I
one
think
of
you're
the,
right.
One of the, I mean, I did that in the late 60s and early 70s, listening to all that was happening in the world beyond the mm-hmm. the farming community in Northwest Missouri where I grew up, and then listening ever more closely to these really old people who were trying to help me grow up because yeah. my dad had died. You used an image when we were listening to Joni Mitchell about you'd rather clean the floor than sweep a dirty floor.
Well, I'd rather sweep a dirty floor.
Oh, you'd rather sweep a dirty floor. Okay, yeah. I got it backwards.
I don't want to, I don't want to clean the floor if it's not dirty. So right. I like to be in challenging situations. I find myself in more difficult situations that need more problem solving, that really call on that part of right. my personality.
Right, and how does that make you feel compared to when you don't have those problems to solve?
With purpose, yeah. purpose, uh-huh. greater purpose.
Uh-huh. Kind of like a 13-year-old.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Wow, I didn't know this was going to be therapy. This is good.
But it's just connections. It's storytelling. Yeah. It's conversations.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
And we get lost oftentimes because we say more than we know, and we oftentimes know more than we can say in any mm-hmm. moment. And that was just an example
yeah.
of it.
Yeah.
So what did you mean by, and so I heard it wrong, but I heard it in the way you'd rather sweep a dirty floor
yeah.
than wash.
Yeah. Then, I think, when I was a kid, we vacuumed and swept the floor regardless of how dirty it was.
Sure.
Because that was, you did it, it was Saturday it was morning and you did
once it. Once a week, whether
yep.
it needed it or
exactly.
not.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you needed to do it.
And that makes me crazy. I'd much rather like live with the dirt for a little while,
right?
So that when it's time to clean, I'm really making a difference.
Right, 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 right.
And
right.
that's something in my life too. Is I want to make a difference.
Right. It also sounds like you don't want to fret.
Hmm.
Because if you're constantly, I mean, if a person sees a speck of dust and needs to jump on it. There's yeah. a certain kind of anxiety and fretting that's yeah. at play there, in my less yeah. than humble opinion. But you don't want to jump. You want to just let it rise to being a problem, and then you'll deal with it once it rises to the mm-hmm. level of a problem. That's what I heard in what you said.
Yeah, I don't know that my husband would agree with you about that.
Because you're jumping from his point of view.
What's that? You left that box there this morning. It's still there.
Well, you know, we and there's also probably gender differences in terms of what's
yeah.
what's a repetitive problem versus what's yeah. a so it's just very funny. So you came to Ithaca
mm-hmm.
in 1984, and what did you intend to do here, and what have you discovered that you've done here?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that. I've never been the kind of person who had a 5-year or 10-year plan.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So I've just been so lucky to just bump into really wonderful opportunities. I did imagine being a change maker, somebody who really got involved in the community. And I did for a while. I worked for a nonprofit called 1% for Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a job at a software company. So I came full circle. I'd started it as computer science math in college, and then I jumped to philosophy and religion, and then I ended up at a computer company for 24 years. I thought maybe I can stick it out for 5 years. And 24 years later, I was finally cutting the cord.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
I had a wonderful, wonderful many years there, even though it got very challenging at the end. The company changed a lot, mm-hmm. went from being a real work hard, play hard, family kind of feeling.
Sure.
To a much more corporate experience. So.
So. What did you, so when we were talking offline, it was almost as though you'd found a much fuller sense of life when you changed your major at IC, but definitely. Then you went back into what you had originally majored with professionally. Why did that happen?
So 1% for Peace closed its doors. The goal was to redirect 1% of the federal defense budget toward promoting peace in positive ways. And mm-hmm. the president at the time announced he was going to devote 3%. So we closed our doors and I was out of a job.
I see.
Wonderful thing.
Success and failure.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And a friend suggested that I apply for a job at a local company. And I started as an assistant to the vice president, and from there moved into technical support and training and project management. And I was able to use not only the math and technical skills that I had, but also the people.
The relational
side. Yeah, the relational side of it. Yeah. Really dealing with people and learning about them and helping them get through this process of learning a system, which was actually very rewarding. I liked that a lot.
Right. And it's, so some people, I mean, I had this illusion that I could have these plans for my life, but mm-hmm. given the fact that I grew up in a rural environment with mentors who were from the late 19th and early 20th century, I had nothing, all of my thoughts were like, almost like out of sync. Mm-hmm. And they've only become more in sync with the recent, you know, ripping apart of the country, because a lot of the roots of those rips were planted 50 and 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So I know that. I know this space we live in well, but I've been waiting for a long time for something appropriate to happen. And my plans rarely worked out as I thought they would.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also been very interesting. So you just have chosen, in a certain sense, or maybe not chosen, but just lived into what you've discovered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where did you learn that? Where did you learn to trust that? Is that something that's typical in your family, or is that just some of your personality? How did you learn to trust that?
That's interesting. Yeah. I'm not sure I know.
Yeah, no, and they may not have
it's
an answer.
It's fascinating.
Certainly
yeah, I mean,
a
I
simple
think,
answer.
Yeah, I think about my grandmother and my mother, who were both very strong women. My mom left Binghamton, New York when she was 20 and moved to New York City. She'd been there before, but sort of sight unseen,
right.
Got a job, got an apartment with somebody she didn't know and started a completely different part of her life. She just launched
Boom.
On her own, very brave, very exciting time of her life, you know. And I think I've just sort of followed that kind of model where you just kind of leap into things. Not moving, because obviously I've been here for a long time, but...
Right. But it is leaping into things. I mean, emotionally. And that's, I mean, how you shift from computer science to religion and philosophy. I mean, that's a pretty big leap, although I don't have any trouble seeing connections there.
Yeah.
Let's cut to music. What should we play next?
Let's do The Chariot next by Cat Empire.
Okay, here we go.
This is a song that came upon me one night when the news it had been telling me better one more war and one more fight, and I sighed, but then I thought about my friends. Then I wrote this declaration just in case the world end. Our guns, we shot them in the things we said. Oh, we didn't need no bullets, cause we rely on some words instead. Kill someone in argument, out with them with our brains, and we kill ourselves are laughing at the funny things we say. And bombs, we had them safe for special times when the crew would call us shakedown. We break down our party landmine. Women are so sexy, they explode us with their looks. Are we blowing up some speakers, jumping around till the grass shook? Our missiles, they were the road trips that we launched. A trip in
across in silence, start emissions at the break of dawn. Yawn and smile, say what direction shall we take? Somewhere where it warm and wet, this bitter route we'd always take. And our weapons were our instruments, made from a timber and steel. We never yielded to conformity, but stood like kings in a chariot that's riding on a record wheel. Our weapons were our instruments, made from a timber and steel. We never yielded to conformity, but stood like kings in a chariot that's riding on a record wheel. Our weapons were our instruments, made from a timber and steel. We never yielded to conformity, but stood like kings in a chariot that's riding on a record wheel. While we're smoking, now we're feeling extra high. And we sneak into a car park with the skaties on our back. When we're flying down the level, selling on the attack, now on the attack. And battles, they happen in these dinosaurs. See, we'd rather fight with music, choosing one, the rhythm war. Battle at these shakedowns, and we battle at these gigs. We do battle in our bedrooms, made some sweet love to the feet. And our allies grew wherever we would roam. See, whenever we together, any stranger feel at home. Declaration written about my friends, it's engraved into this song, so they know I'm not forgetting them. See, maybe if the world contained more people like these, then the news would not be telling me about all that warfare.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Carolyn Tomeno. So, Carolyn, tell us about that song. Why did you pick that song?
It's a great song. It's a great band. So, my husband and I were introduced to the Cat Empire at the Grassroots Festival, seven, eight, nine, maybe 10 years ago, and fell in love with them. It's joyful, happy music. And when you listen to the lyrics, it's all about people being good to each other. How can we generate more positivity and joy in the world? And this song is about how this group of friends fights the bad news, the bad press in the world, with their own kinds of tools, like their voices, singing. Right. Yeah, I can't remember all the words right now.
Yeah,
but anyway,
yeah. It's called The Chariot. Is that what they're racing off?
Yes,
to battle?
They're going off to battle in their chariot, which is on a wet. It's a record album. Yeah, that's
it's spinning as they go.
Yeah,
okay. Cool. Cool. But I mean, there's also a certain, I'm going to infer, and you can correct me. Is this a good spot to talk about Friendship Donation Network?
Sure.
And your work there?
Yeah. Because
that is kind of a way of doing some, chipping away at some of the damage we do to the world by recovering and reusing stuff.
Yeah.
Particularly food. Yeah. So tell us about Friendship Donation Network and your role there.
Friendship Donations Network started in 1988 with Sarah Pines. Actually, it started before them, but that's the year that she gives to it. And she was in touch with migrant populations that were starving in central New York.
Right.
And at the same time was watching markets throwing away food that was perfectly edible, but not sellable because it wasn't pretty. Damage to a container, one bad orange in a bag, that kind of thing.
Right.
Slightly yellowed, wilted greens. Mm-hmm. And she shamed these store managers into finally yielding and giving her the food that they were going to throw away.
Right.
So that she could bring it to folks who were hungry. And over the course of 30 years, we've expanded that model. She retired from that position 8 years ago. and recruited a board of 10 people and a part-time coordinator to take the lead and continue that work. And we're just barely able to do as well as she did at the time. So Megan Sheehan Rosen is the coordinator, and she's been the coordinator for 8 years, since the beginning almost. And after that period of time, she said, you know, I really need a break. I love the work I'm doing. I want to keep doing it, but I need to take some time away and think about the bigger picture.
Sure, sure, sure.
And so the board got together and came up with a plan to give her a 6-month sabbatical. And I was on the board at the time, and had actually taken a little sabbatical of my own with my husband and my youngest stepdaughter to South America. And so they asked if I would step in for 6 months and sit in for her and try to keep the ball rolling while she was gone. And it's been a wonderful opportunity for me to get to know this population, the people who who need more help in our community,
right,
who often are invisible and go unseen,
right,
but also to be in touch with the people who are passionate about not throwing away food. It's one of the biggest problem, one of the largest greenhouse gas emitters in the world is all of our wasted food. People who are passionate about protecting the environment and also passionate about getting food to people who need it, nutritious, fresh food.
Right. And the way the problem, we experienced this problem 100 years ago, 150 years ago, the problem was with waste of food in the field or in the point of production. We couldn't get it out. And then when getting it out and getting it processed and processing it became the point where we had a lot of waste. And then now, as we've become extremely efficient at producing and processing food, the point of consumption has become the location of waste. And so we now have to just really face what we have. So my understanding, Sarah did this in part because of her own experience of food scarcity during the time of the Holocaust. And that's that is a powerful life commitment to to say, you know, I'm going to help people now. And it is a environmental issue, but it's also a deeply personal personal issue.
And she also is very passionate about making the organization volunteer-driven and community-owned. And that's something that we've really made an effort. It's not always easy to, we were talking about this earlier, to let things happen, to let the community manage this situation, not have a lot of rules.
And that's what I wanted to add. What did you mean by volunteer-owned and community-driven and volunteer-driven? What does that mean? As a board member, as an interim coordinator?
We want people to take ownership of, first of all, this resource that we have, which is all of this food.
Right.
And there seems to be more and more of it coming. There's legislation that passed, and in 2022, large producers of food waste are going to have to donate it or compost it. But by empowering the community to largely manage this organization, it's not really dependent on any individual or corporate body. It will keep running on its own as time goes on.
But actually, and how it handles food, how it distributes food, how it engages will vary every 3 to 5 years with whoever happens to be on the board, what the distribution locations are, what the pickup locations are, what people's schedules are. We have a very hard time imagining that something like that can just organically evolve over time. We want to make it a regular, predictable, organized sort of thing.
And it is not predictable. You never know what you're going to get. This year we got very little zucchini, for instance, from local farmers. Most years you have to lock your car doors so people don't leave a zucchini in there. But this year was tomatoes and kale. And so you never know what you're going to get the most of. And
you never know who's going to want it or where you're going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And are you able to distribute everything you get, or do you have to also find ways to compost? Or
We do some composting. I would say we do. We just started measuring that. Again, we've got one part-time employee, me, right, 25 hours a week. So we don't have a lot of time to do the measuring that we'd like to do.
Sure.
But I think that measuring the waste that we're putting out would be a really good thing. So after people, if the food is still edible for animals, we'll donate it to local farmers.
Right.
And then after that, we'll compost. And I really think we're maybe doing 10 pounds a week at the most of composting.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Wow.
More going to animals, but yeah, it's not a lot of composting.
Right. But the animals is where they would have gone to on the farm too. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the saws that I use is, if it's a community, it's not organized, and if it's organized, it's not a community, and that's kind of rigid. But mm-hmm. the community organizer is, from my point of view, an oxymoron. Those are two words that ought not be next to each other, mm-hmm. because in what I have seen as community, it's a place where people see something and they deal with it. They find a way to connect with people to mm-hmm. solve a problem. They do not need to be blessed by the mm-hmm. by an incorporation paper or by mm-hmm. even by their neighbors who may not agree with what they're doing. Yeah. They just do it.
Yeah.
And they get other people who will help do it, but it's a minimal amount of organization. Mm-hmm. And it seems like this is trying to hold that funky yeah. space between just individual initiative, personal your personal stake in the universe mm-hmm. versus having a number of people who kind of share that, but yeah. they don't have to agree a lot in mm-hmm. order to do it, and you don't need people with a lot of political or social economic similarities to participate in an activity mm-hmm. like this.
It's true, we're all doing this kind of from the same inclination. We have a passion for helping other people, and right. I think if everyone had an opportunity to spend a little bit of time doing that, helping other people, mm-hmm. We'd be living in a different place.
Right. But also it's a passion to not waste. Mm-hmm. And it's a passion to celebrate abundance rather than to live in fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when we do have enough and it's just a matter of getting it to other people, there is so much joy.
Yeah,
in that mm-hmm. that it's even the service, which can be burdensome if we can get burned out on service.
Yeah,
but it can be.
That's a really good point. Right. Yeah, it's easy to get burned out on service.
Right.
Yeah,
right. And but experiencing that I have this abundance to pass through. It doesn't have to be handled perfectly. If we have to compost some, mm-hmm. if some goes to feeding livestock, that's mm-hmm. fine. But we are just doing well with each other
mm-hmm.
this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or this month.
Yeah.
I'm rambling. Anyway.
No, that's good.
let's cut to music. What should we play next?
Let's do Don't Stop Me Now, the Queen song.
Okay. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Carolyn Tomaino. So here we go.
Tonight, I'm gonna have myself a real good time. I feel alive.
Good time, having
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Carolyn Tomeno. So, Carolyn, how has life surprised you? How have you had to change in ways that you would not have chosen, and it's worked out, or what forced you to change a deeply held commitment that you didn't anticipate? You can pick any one of those three perspectives and go, or maybe some combination of them, but it's important, I think, for us to hear how we've changed, because a lot of our narratives seem to be determined, but a lot of our lives aren't.
Well, I'm not done yet.
No. So, well, there's that too.
I mean, I have a lot. Yeah. There's a lot of things that the last few years politically have sort of changed my opinions about the nature of people. Or maybe it's evolving a little bit. I still want to believe in the goodness of people.
Right.
But seeing so much ugliness has made me wonder if everyone's to be trusted, really, you know.
Okay, so we'll unpack that a little bit. So
yeah,
what I'm hearing is that you could empathize and reach out to anyone prior to this rude awakening, sometime around 2016. So what did you realize wasn't necessarily so? And how did that shock yourself?
I think what I didn't realize was how many people there were, how many of our neighbors in this country were really buying into the greed is good kind of conversation, that philosophy that it's good to be selfish, and that's the powerful stance. That's the way to get what you need in the world is
right.
To go after it for yourself. And I think, I guess I just assumed that more people were generous naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that it's just a response to fear. You know, there was a lot of change in the 8 years prior, and, you know, perhaps it's just the backlash.
Right, right. I guess I see. There's liberal greed and there's conservative greed, and one tends to be tied to individualism and one tends to be tied to productive market systems more. And they're both highly problematic, and I've had to live in both environments. And then there are people who are not really concerned about greed, but they want to live the life that they think that they should be able to strive for without a lot of interference.
Yeah.
They want to discover their own problems, which in a certain sense is your stance towards life. You want to discover the problems that you have to face.
Mm-hmm.
And when people tell you what is moral or what is right or what is wrong, whether it's from the right or the left, people reject it. People object. People want to figure out their problems
on their own
for themselves. Mm-hmm. That's my take. And we've been kicking the can down the road for so long. And you know, we've had a lot of coercive institutions, but if you happen to agree with the ethics of coercion that's been used and values, then you're going to be really happy with where we were for the past, or most of where we were for the past 50 years. And if you don't, you're going to be really unhappy.
Yeah.
But it's about expressing the lives. So, but it shocked you in 2016.
Yeah, I think, I was on the phone with a friend of mine at the time when the results were coming in of the election, and we couldn't believe it.
Right.
It's been, I do try to be empathetic. I do try to understand, and perhaps I've just been a part of a more progressive community for so long that I can't get my mind around the passion that people feel.
Right, the anger, the rage.
Yeah.
I mean, you use passion, but I'm perceiving anger and rage.
Yeah. I don't know that it's actually. I don't think that my opinion has changed, but it has shocked and surprised me.
And you do you know what to do with it now?
I mean, I'm still kind of working on that.
Working on that one.
Yeah.
So for me, election day, I said before the tally that it wouldn't surprise me if, because this seemed to be the direction we've been heading since the very early 70s, if not the late 60s, in terms of the division in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in a place where we had a woman mayor in 1930, one of the first elected women officials, and 70 years before Ithaca had a woman mayor. I grew up in a place, in a congregation, where the president of the National Farmers Organization, a progressive cooperative organization around farming and selling as farm producer cooperatives to try to get higher prices for farmers for mm-hmm. food and for production. And a president of a national organization called the Sisters of Pythia was in the congregation I grew up in. This was a community that was really tied to national trends, but there was always a division in the community between, for example, the farmers who would slaughter pigs because the price was too low on the market, and they would just bury them in a ditch as a way to force the price up, mm-hmm. or that would dump milk. You know, there were farmers who were completely opposed to that, but some of the more progressives really wanted to force the prices up, and the only way they felt you could do that was to get it off the market.
Mm-hmm.
And that threw a wedge among people, and people had strong moral opinions about whether you would do those kinds of things or not.
Because
mm-hmm. some of them, you would never waste food.
Yeah.
You would find a way to preserve it, give it away, do whatever you could with it, but never waste any of your production.
Mm-hmm.
And these really difficult battles over individualism and cooperativism versus socialism, and cooperativism is a middle space in this country that we have lost politically.
Yeah,
because we tend to talk about individualism or socialism, and we don't tend to talk about this cooperativism, which requires consent. It cannot be coerced.
Mm-hmm.
But that is, to me, the heart of our story that we've missed in the last 50 years. We haven't found ways to consent to each other across moral and cultural and differences in meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched that division happen as a kid in the late 60s and early 70s, and it's just done nothing but get more severe from my point of view. So it's the heartbreak in some ways that has defined my life.
Mm-hmm.
So it did not surprise me. I don't necessarily know what to do with it,
mm-hmm.
but I do know that having places for profound differences makes for people to live different sorts of lives without judging each other.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten into such a judgmental tone on the right and the left about each other's lives that we need to kind of step back from that and then just ask, well, what's the problem that you could use some help with?
Mm-hmm.
You know, not how, you know,
yeah.
and then that's, I think, and that's what's inspiring to me about things like the Friendship Donations Network is that you can do those informal kinds of figuring things out across differences. You know, mm-hmm. what's your healthcare problem? What's your raising children? What's your aging problem?
Yeah.
What's your whatever? You know, what could you use some help with? And what do you want to just kind of noodle through so that we can appreciate the life you really value?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do a lot of that. I mean, that's part of what this show is about.
Yeah.
Is making those lives more transparent.
Yeah. And I think that it's one of the things that I love the most about being at FDN is that there are people coming from every kind of different background and diverse aspect of gender and race, and you know, we've just
values
got
and values. Politics
exactly
and,
yeah. and we're all assembling together in this toward this purpose and we can disagree and do it lovingly and gently
and still make sure everybody has food
even
if we do it different ways,
mm-hmm.
or we pull food from different sources.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We may bump into each other once in a while about it, and that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. But that, I mean, the body without tension is a corpse, right after death and before rigor. I mean, we need tension to keep, and every muscle works in equal opposition from the other side, and we just kind of forget that those metaphors are really useful.
Yeah.
And if we assume that there won't be tension, there won't be fighting, there won't be conflict, then we've kind of sold ourselves short. And it's, in a certain sense, it's that 13-year-old story. You didn't know what you were going to do when you left one place on Long Island to
mm-hmm.
move a mile away to another,
mm-hmm.
and you had to reinvent yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I mean that, yeah. I mean, thank you for this. This is really neat. So let's cut to music again, and then we're going to talk a little bit about your what you do for self-care, which is how
okay.
I normally close the show.
Okay.
What should we play next?
Let's do Long Time Gone by the Dixie Chicks.
Okay, here we go. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Carolyn Tomeno. So, Carolyn, the way we close the show is with a question about what you do to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And not to overdo it, but you learned a major lesson in self-care when you had to reinvent yourself when you moved at age 13. But when... What do you do to take care of yourself emotionally, physically, intellectually, and how do you know you need to do it throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly? You know,
you
took a sabbatic before. You said,
"Yeah, we did," and that's definitely something we did to nurture ourselves.
Sure.
I mean, I've been with my current husband for 15 years, and he definitely lets me know when I need to. Do some self-care.
The feedback loop is immediate.
So after 24 years of working hard for a software company in the corporate world, I had to leave, had to get out.
Sure.
My husband wasn't enjoying his job at the time very much, so he was thinking about getting out. My stepdaughter, high school was not working for her. She had to get out. So, Adam suggested that we do something crazy and get out of the country for a while. So we went south to Colombia for 4 months. We were going to plant ourselves and get jobs. And decided instead to backpack. So we ditched our rolly bags and we got backpacks and started traveling around and working on farms for room and board. And yeah, and it was sometimes very hard, but it was enriching in ways that is hard to quantify. It was really an amazing experience.
In Antioquia.
Yes, in Antioquia. And then we went down through Ecuador. And we landed in Peru and did Machu Picchu, which was our reward for
4 months
working so hard. Yeah, yeah.
Wow,
it was wonderful. Wow. It really was. Wow. Yeah.
So that's kind of like the big life reset.
Yeah, exactly. The reset button.
So how do you do? What do you do more? You know, throughout the day, daily, weekly, to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
How do you know you need to?
Yeah, I breathe.
Do you meditate, or do you just are you just conscious of the breathing?
I don't do long meditations. I will do a few minutes at a time, and that is very, very therapeutic.
If you have a muscle memory, what I've found doing just a few minutes or a few breaths is all it takes to induce a reaction. I've meditated twice a day for an hour each time for 3 months between my junior and before my junior year of college. And it's a memory that all I have to do is breathe deeply and I will yell. I'm just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Make me yawn.
That's so funny. Yeah.
It's because it's just the induced reaction.
Yeah.
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 So you do the breathing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love to ride my bike, which I used to do when I was 13 too. Yeah. So we ride bikes a lot. I love to swim. I've done the lake a couple times, swimming. That's a wonderful experience. And I love to just sit on the couch with the cats, cat in the lap, and just the purring and that
feel
energy.
The breathing and the purring.
Yeah. That's a real
the warmth.
Nice way. Yeah.
Right. And what you described before in terms of your working with people, you are a co-laborer more than a coach.
Yeah. I'm working very hard to be less of a coach. I am, like I said, a problem solver. So at work, at FDN, I'm really learning to nurture the side of me that can sort of step back and watch people and let them do their thing.
Right. And ask a question. What's that about?
Yeah.
And people figure it out.
Yeah, exactly.
And it may not be what you thought it was about.
Yeah. Or asking for people to do things.
Sure.
So that's, you know, asking for help.
Sure.
It's a good
thing. Sure. And it's a, in community as opposed to an organization, we need signals. We need to be able to signal each other that something needs attention. We don't necessarily have to define it. Whereas in an organization, where you are in the structure and in the rules and professionalism gets to define who gets to speak to what issue and when.
Yeah.
But in a community, anybody who identifies, what I like to say in rather profane language is, if you see shit, you do shit. And that's because and there are no boundaries around that, because when you see it, you let it be known.
Yeah.
And that spark or that signaling behavior is something we often don't appreciate.
Yeah.
You don't have to solve the problem, but you do need to identify it or, you know, point it out.
Yeah.
So, what do you do? So hiking for that many miles, what do you do routinely for your physical care?
So we did finally join the gym.
You said bicycles. Yeah.
So during the summer we ride.
Sure.
And I live downtown, so I can bike to
FDN.
I was also working at Reuse for a while, which I may get back to.
Sure.
Very close to my house also. So biking even through the winter, hopefully I'll be able to do.
Cool. And the piece that I was saying about the co-laboring is more the emotional support stuff. But what I wanted to get to, and I don't know why I went to physical stuff, intellectually, what do you do to kind of stimulate that, the connections, the intellectual connections?
Yeah. I get a lot of energy from working with people. So I feel like that's really nurturing my my emotional, mental,
sure,
intellectual
sure,
experience in the world.
So what I'm going to say there is that in above and beyond the emotional appreciation and engagement, there is an understanding how the structure of the universe works from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That's intellectually interesting, mm-hmm, to you.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not emotional. That is taking on a whole different analytical discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Each person is their own universe,
mm-hmm,
in terms of how they analyze and understand stuff, and much of it may be vague or precise or whatever. We don't necessarily know, but it stimulates us to think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. What would you like to close the show today with?
This is, and I wish I could say his last name. You don't know how to say his last name,
else,
do you? It's Israel, and he went by Iz, I believe. And
right,
it's Somewhere Over the Rainbow and What a Wonderful World.
Carolyn, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
It's been very nice. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Will I see skies of blue?